Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Think of all the sleep hacks you've ever heard. You could spend years trying them all, or you could instantly transform your sleep with Bowl and Branch. They make the softest, most breathable bedding you'll ever feel, and it's all 20% off. That's their best sale of the entire season. Millions of sleepers love their buttery soft sheets, airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and so much more. And you can try all of them for 20% off with promo code BUTTERY20. So hurry to bowlandbranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and branch.com. See site for details.
Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep. As somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? I hope you are having a brilliant day. I am okay. So today, I am going to start with a bit of housekeeping, and then I'm going to talk about wish cycling, which is a very interesting thing, and what it means to people who hoard in particular. And then there is going to be a top tip. So I'm going to start with a bit of housekeeping, which I know I've made a joke about that so many times, but it does consistently make me laugh. So, first of all, I have finally created an Instagram account, and I would love it if you came over there and followed me. I am at That Hoarder Podcast, and come and say hi. Yeah, I'll be interested to see how that goes. So that's the first thing. Second thing, if you are in Canada, and I know that in the last 30 days, 809 of you in Canada have downloaded this podcast, so I know there's a few of you. There is an article in the current issue edition of Elle Canada, E-L-L-E, Canada, which is kind of all about this podcast, which is amazing. The journalist contacted me ages ago. Things in print magazines all happen way ahead of time. And I spoke to this journalist, and I was a bit worried about how it would turn out. But then she sent me a PDF the other day, and it's actually really nice about the podcast and really nice in terms of how it talks about hoarding, which, as you all know, is really important to me, that it's not this massively either sensationalized or uber kind of shaming thing. And she didn't fall into either of those traps. And it's actually, you know, for a big glossy magazine, it's really, really, really cool that it's been portrayed in that way. The article is not online yet. It may never be, but I will keep an eye out for that. But if you're in Canada, go out and buy Elle, because how cool is that? And I also want to mention, if you listen on the Stitcher app, if you listen to your podcasts on an app called Stitcher, it is closing down, I believe, in August. So you're going to need to find an alternative. Thankfully, there are a lot of podcast apps around. So depending on which kind of device you use, have a look around, try a few, and see which feels like a good replacement for you, if that's how you're listening. So, wish cycling. I only heard this term recently, and I found it. I knew as soon as I read the definition, I was like, I know I've done this. I know lots of people do it. And once I learned how kind of damaging and counterproductive it was, and when I thought about all the implications for hoarders in particular, I thought it was definitely worth dedicating an episode to. So, wish cycling is when you put something in the recycling bin, hoping that it will be recycled, even though it can't be. It might be unsuitable, it might be contaminated, it might be partly recyclable, but not fully. And it's kind of, it can be, I wish this was recyclable, so I'll put it in the recycling bin. It can be, I don't know if this is recyclable, so I'll put it in the recycling bin. Or it can be that you believe it is, but in fact it isn't. So I know I've done this before. I don't think I've done it knowingly very much, but I have done it kind of optimistically, like, I'm really not sure about this, I'll put it in just in case. And I think I assumed there would be somebody at the other end who would spot it if it wasn't appropriate and take it out and all would be well. And it seems like I was wrong about that. So I think I was kind of overestimating the capacity of some bloke at the other end spotting it and taking it out. I think so in researching this episode, I've done so much reading about what happens to waste when you put something in the bin or when you put something in the recycling bin, what happens from there. And I'm not massively confident I know, even though I've read a gazillion articles about it now, because it's different from, certainly within the UK, it's different from town to town and city to city. So certainly across the world, it's a different system everywhere. You know, in some cities in the UK, a lot of waste is incinerated, which is not ideal, but then, like, obviously pollution wise, but then often the heat created from that is used to heat buildings in the city, and that sounds like it would be good energy wise. And how much sorting is done at the other end really depends from place to place. So I'm still not fully clear. I wish there was a really standard process that waste went through so we could really understand what was happening, but it seems that is just not the case. So wish cycling often has positive motives. People who wish cycle often do it because they want something to be recycled. However, there are real problems that it can cause if we put something that's not a recyclable plastic in the plastics bin, for instance. The big one is that bit of plastic can contaminate an entire batch of recycling. And when that happens, when that plastic is contaminated, the entire lot may end up having to be sent to a landfill because the recycling plant says, nope, we can't do that. And because it's really expensive for them to separate and process everything separately. And also it can damage the equipment. If we put something in a recycling bin that is not supposed to be there, then when it gets to the sorting plant, it can cause problems that then cost a lot to fix. And that then makes the services of the recycling plant more expensive, which can then make local authorities more wary of even bothering. It's a real cycle of negativity. So if you know something can't be recycled, but you wish it could, or if you're not sure something can be recycled and are putting it in just in case, what feels like just taking a bit of a chance can actually have quite a negative result on the whole process. Now, a lot of items, I found lists of items that are commonly wish cycled, things that people think should be recyclable, they believe they must be, and so that often end up in recycling bins when they cannot actually be recycled. Oh, and again, this varies from town to town and city to city and country to country, but it will give you a place to start if you commonly put these things in the recycling bin, just to check in your local area whether they can be or should be there. So plastic bags, like carrier bags from shops, are generally not able to be recycled in the kind of recycling collections that happen from your home. And when a plastic bag ends up in that kind of stream of recycling, it can really kind of clog up the machines that sort the plastics and then contaminate other stuff in the same batch. Another one is what I would call crisp packets. In some other parts of the world, they would be called chip packets. You know, the kind of thing. And because of the way those packets are made, it's a whole kind of mixture of different materials. And that makes them very, very difficult to recycle, especially through general waste programs. It's a lot easier to, well, not a lot easier. It's only really possible, generally speaking, through really specialized programs. So that's something to be careful of. Styrofoam as well. Positively, I see less and less use of styrofoam these days. It used to be that if you bought a cup of tea when you were out and about, it would come in a styrofoam cup. But I don't often see them now. But anyway, most home kind of curbside collections cannot deal with styrofoam. So if you have styrofoam, don't chuck it in the recycling bin without checking really carefully whether you can. It may be that you can find a specialised recycling program to deal with them, or it may be that you just have to put them in the bin. And another one is pizza boxes. That's the one I kept reading about as well. Because we think pizza box, surely that's just cardboard. Surely that can go in the recycling. But because they get oily and food, you know, you get bits of sweet corn that stick to the box and all that kind of thing, that makes them really, really problematic in the recycling system. And so if you have a pizza box, it most likely cannot go in your recycling bin. If it can, you really, really have to make sure that none of the greasy, oily, foody bits get in there. So they are just some examples of things that are commonly wish-cycled. But the thing with it is, because recycling provision varies from place to place, the best way to avoid wish-cycling, well, one way to avoid wish-cycling, I'm going to go into other ways in a bit, but one of the key things you need to know if you live in a place where your rubbish is collected once a week or once a fortnight, and that includes a recycling collection, check what the rules are for your area. It might be, I know a lot of the recycling bins have stickers on them that says what can go in them and what can't. So I've seen that across the UK. And so it's worth just reminding yourself once in a while. It might be that you're accidentally wish cycling because you assume something can go in because you've put it in so many times. It's always worth rechecking your local recycling rules. If that means going onto your local authority website, I'm sure that will have a page dedicated to it. And once you know what can and can't be recycled, especially in that kind of curbside collection from home, then that will help you to avoid that kind of accidental wish cycling. Another thing to do to avoid wish cycling is to, if you have been, like me, occasionally putting things in the hope that it can be recycled, stop doing that. Now that I know, and now that you know, that that's not a problem-free approach to the world, if you're unsure, it's unfortunate, but if you're unsure and you really can't get an answer, put it in the regular bin or look up specialist services specifically, because, you know, it's not harmless to just chuck something in the recycling in the hope. Another thing that's quite simple, actually, to avoid causing problems with the recycling system down the line is to make sure that stuff is just clean when you put it in the bin. And that's fairly easy to do. And also things like, I mean, I was saying that you don't often see styrofoam cups anymore, but you still see paper cups for when you buy a cup of tea when you're out and about. And so having things, I'm not suggesting, because I know some listeners are always keen to have an excuse to buy something. So this is not that. I am not saying go out and buy loads of reusable coffee cups and bags and food containers and all that of those kind of things, because this is not that podcast. However, if you have those things already, make sure you take them with you when you might need them. If you know that you get a cup of coffee on the way to work every day, take that reusable coffee cup with you and actually use it so that you're not in a position where a paper coffee cup or a styrofoam coffee cup has to go in either the bin or wrongly in the recycling. Now, there are websites where you can put in the thing you've got that you want to recycle and roughly where you are, and it will tell you if that can be recycled anywhere near you and where. One in the UK is called Recycle Now, but I have no doubt that other parts of the world will have their own. And that can be really good for, like, if you've got garden waste or if you've got something that you're just not sure about. You're not sure if it can go in the bin, or you're not sure if there's anywhere near you that will take it in to recycle. And this one is UK specific, but is so good that it's worth sharing. And I really hope that other countries would have similar things. This is a website called TerraCycle, TerraCycle. I will link to it from the website, from the show notes at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. And TerraCycle gets companies, the manufacturers, to sponsor a recycling program, and they're all a bit different, but the number of things that would otherwise be really difficult to recycle that you can recycle through TerraCycle is honestly a bit mind-blowing. There are programs to recycle contact lenses. There are programs to recycle cheese packaging. There are programs to recycle liquid soap containers. There are programs to recycle disposable razors. I mean, there are so many. And some of them are like brand specific, like any fans of Babybel cheese, there are ways to recycle all of the packaging from Babybel cheese, including the wax. And some of them are like sponsored by a particular company, but will work with the packaging from any. So like the disposable razor one is sponsored by Gillette, but will take any disposable razors. And some of them have drop-off points. Some of them you fill a box at home and send it in. But honestly, I bet you didn't know that there were recycling programs specifically for toothbrushes, did you? It's really impressive. One of them is for crisp packets as well. But it's great and a good way if you have a lot of stuff that can't be collected from the bin outside, but that you're very conscious and you don't want to get rid of otherwise. Now, I do have to say at this point that if you hoard, the priority has to be de-hoarding, getting stuff out. And so if you end up with one box ready to go with the disposable contact lenses and one box ready to go with your laundry care packaging and one box ready to go with your water filter packaging, then that will guarantee basically an interruption and a diversion from your actual de-hoarding. It will make it really difficult. There are times when you just have to get stuff out, and if it doesn't get recycled when it might otherwise have been, that's a shame. But your priority, without question, has to be having a livable home. And so if you have kept every disposable contact lens for the last 3 years in the hope that there would be a system like this, and it would take you 5 minutes to put them in a box and stick a packaging label on, then sure, go ahead. But don't let this become an unworkable, impossible system that will just delay you making progress in your home. But more important than any of that is not creating as much waste in the first place. Now, let me explain. I am not saying do not throw things out. I am not saying do not get rid of things from your home. I am absolutely not saying any of those things. What we need to do, both as hoarders and as citizens of a world that has far more plastic on it than we can ever deal with, we need to interrupt the process before it gets to something at the end of its life needing recycling. And there's a reason that the old kind of three R's has recycle at the end: reduce, reuse, recycle, because they are in order of preference. And the best thing we can do by far for the planet is to reduce our consumption in the first place. And that is for the planet. But as hoarders, the best thing we can do is reduce our consumption in the first place. This is really, really vital to understand, that what we are dealing with in our homes is overwhelm. We are overwhelmed by the amount of stuff we've brought in. That's what it comes down to. And by the amount of stuff we haven't let go. And so as hoarders, even if you're not at all concerned about the environment of kind of the earth, if you're concerned about your environment in your home, less needs to come in. Whether you're buying it new, rescuing it from the street, buying it secondhand, doesn't matter. We need to reduce the amount coming in. But I found, well, the three R's, there are newer iterations of the three R's, and there's a few different variations, but the five R's made a lot of sense to me. And that is reduce, reuse, repair, rot, recycle. Some people add refuse, repurpose, refurbish, reclaim. But I think reduce, reuse, repair, rot, recycle is really useful. But as people who hoard, we have to hear it differently. So I'm going to go through each of those in terms of what they mean, and then in terms of what we specifically need to be really careful about when we are thinking about the five R's. So reduce. I've just been talking about that. If you can avoid starting the process that ends in waste, that is the ideal way to do it. If you can consume less, if you can bring less into your home, that then everybody's winning. Everybody's winning, including you. And the next one is reuse. So this is if you have something that's perfectly good, but you no longer need it or want it, then you can give it to somebody who would reuse it. Or it can be getting something secondhand rather than brand new, reusing something that somebody else has previously used. And that makes a lot of sense to me. It avoids something else having to be manufactured and shipped around the world and stored in a warehouse and then shipped to a shop and then either brought home by you or shipped to you. And it avoids all of that. It is more economical. Again, everybody wins. But, you know, when everybody doesn't win, that's when you are a person who hoards and you can't get rid of anything because you are convinced you will reuse it or you are convinced someone else should be able to reuse it. And some of those things are things that maybe other people could reuse or maybe you could reuse. Some of those things are things that in reality nobody else would want to reuse or that you should not reuse. So it might be that you have a t-shirt that no longer fits you, but you think somebody else should be able to enjoy this t-shirt. But in reality, it's got a stain that will not come out no matter how many times you wash it. And it's kind of a bit worn and torn. You might think, I can't throw this away because somebody could reuse it. But chances are, in fact, I'm confident nobody's going to reuse that. It no longer fits you. Other people, in these days of fast fashion, you can get another t-shirt for £3, whether that's new or reused. And there's no need to wear somebody else's stained, torn, worn old t-shirt. And that's obviously just one example. But just because you think something in principle could or should be reused does not mean that in reality it has any chance of being reused. Another example of where a hoarder's thinking might be different on reuse and more problematic is if something is actually not safe to reuse. It might be that you've found an old microwave on the side of the road and you rescued it and brought it home and you think, oh great, I can reuse that. And actually you don't know how long it was out there. You don't know if it got rained on. You don't have the capability of doing an electrical safety check. You just don't know. Similarly with plastic containers, you don't know what's been in them before. You don't know if they're safe to put food in. There's all kinds of things that a hoarder's brain will go, oh, that could be reused like this. But actually, it may be a really, really bad idea. So, whereas the principle of reuse is a great one for most people and can be a great one for us, it's one where we have to be a bit careful that we're not holding on to something when chances are it will not be reused or should not be reused.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The listener voicemail segment has a monthly theme to help you think of something to say. So for July, the question to answer is, what is a lesson you've learned recently? Maybe you've learnt that avoiding certain shops helps you to keep your acquiring under control, or that the world doesn't end if you run out of something you thought you needed. This is your opportunity to share your learnings with us. Have your say with your voice. If you want to record a voice message to me to potentially play on a future podcast episode, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail and leave a message. The topic for July is a lesson you've learnt recently. Let us know what you're thinking at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail. The next one on the five R's is repair. So rather than throwing something away or sending it to recycling, can it actually be fixed? So you might have a pair of jeans that are perfectly good, except they have worn, the seam has worn away on one part and it's come open. And it might be that instead of throwing them away or sending them off to textile recycling or something, you can actually just sew the hole and continue wearing them, and that would be brilliant. It might be that you have some garden equipment that feels like it's not really working so well anymore, but actually it just needs sharpening, or it just needs a bit of care and attention. It might be that you have some kitchen chairs that are really past their best, but in terms of how they look, and it's all quite cosmetic. And so actually kind of upcycling it, or frankly just painting it, doesn't always have to be as involved as upcycling, does it? It can just be a coat of paint, can make it feel like a whole new set of kitchen chairs, and they are structurally absolutely fine. They were just a bit chipped and old looking. So they are examples of when repairing can be used to avoid waste and to make things last longer. But as hoarders, we have to, again, be a bit more aware than most people that actually repairing something and intending to repair something are very, very different things. It might be that you think, I can repair that. Great, but will you repair it? You might think, oh, I can repaint that and it will be fine. But will you repaint it and it will be fine? It might be that you think, oh, I can sew that up and it will be as good as new. But will you sew it up and it will be as good as new? Something I use for myself is I give myself a 2-week deadline to fix something. And if it hasn't been fixed within 2 weeks, it has to go. So a while ago, I tore one of my favourite pairs of trousers, and I really wanted, it was a relatively easy thing to sew, like I don't know how to use a sewing machine or anything like that, but it would be easy to hand sew, and I've done that a million times. So I found, you know, my needles and thread and all of that, but then I gave myself a very strict 2-week deadline, because it might be that the trousers had sat there with the needle and thread for another 5 years. And with the threat of if I haven't fixed this by a week on Monday, I have to throw the trousers away. With that deadline and with that threat, I sewed them up and I continued to wear them, and I was very happy about that. If I hadn't had that deadline, I know for a fact they would still be sitting in the spare room waiting to be fixed. So one way around any kind of compulsion to keep something so you can fix it is to give yourself a strict deadline and stick with it. That's just as important as setting the deadline in the first place. And also the things that I mentioned in the previous section about reusing also apply to repair. Just because you can repair something, should you? It might be that you want to repair something and actually you're not that bothered about it in the first place. And so do you want to put that time and effort in when you could be spending that time and effort actually de-hoarding and making your home a really, really nice place to be? And is it safe to repair it? Some things can be repaired and they are absolutely great. Other things are genuinely past their best. And you've got to be realistic about that. Always think about the volume of stuff you've got. If you have some kitchen chairs that could be cheered up with a coat of paint, but they are 4 of 24 kitchen chairs you've got, there is a time and a place when you're de-hoarding to say, I could fix these, but I have so many kitchen chairs that I don't need to fix these. And actually, I don't have the time or the energy to take full responsibility for every one of these 24 chairs when I know that I need 4 and I'm already overwhelmed by stuff. If repairing becomes either a distraction or an excuse to keep something, that is something we have to be super keenly aware of as people who hoard. We can think all kinds of things in order to justify keeping something. I know that. You know that. We can come up with a justification for anything. And if either I'm going to repair it or, well, I have repaired it, comes into play, that can be a justification to keep something when in fact it should just go. And I know it's hard to let anything go if you feel like it has the chance of a life, has the chance of being used and loved. But when you're dealing with the kind of volume of stuff that a hoarder might have in your home, there is definitely an argument for just getting rid of a lot of it. It would be lovely to be able to take absolutely perfect care of everything. But the reality is that if you are in a hoarded home, there is too much stuff to do that with. And you might be able to recycle that one thing. You might be able to repair that other thing. You might be able to give that other thing to a charity shop so it can be reused. But you're dealing with volume and you're dealing with overwhelm and you're dealing with so much stuff. And the priority is you and your home and the people you live with. That is more important than a broken chair or a damp microwave or a torn pair of jeans. The fourth R is rot. And that is things like kitchen scraps. It is things like when you've mowed the lawn, all those kind of grass clippings, grass cuttings, and things that can be turned into compost if you have a compost bin or if there is a compost collection near your home. And the argument is that that stuff, the potential it has, for the good it can do for your garden or for the land in general is so valuable that it's a real shame to let it just go into the landfill and rot there. And especially given how much food a lot of people waste, I can really see this argument. I can really see that organic waste like this is a waste to end up in landfill. I think it's a really interesting process if you start putting your potato peelings and tea bags without plastic into the compost bin to see it gradually break down. And I know people who've got like worms in their compost bin that they ordered. You get worms in the post and then put them in the compost bin. And it's a really fascinating and interesting process and really nice to get those nutrients and things back into the soil. I think it's beautiful and I think it's really valuable. However, did you guess there was going to be a however? However, again, for hoarders, this can be a different matter. It can be overwhelming to have yet another option for your waste when you're already dealing with stuff you're keeping, stuff that's going in the bin, stuff that's going in the green recycling bin, stuff that's going in the blue recycling bin, stuff that's going in the yellow recycling bin. And also to have a compost bin, and also now I've mentioned sending your single-use contact lenses through the post, doing that as well. It's laudable to want to, but often if somebody hoards, the choice is not put it in the regular bin and the valuable organic matter will go into landfill, or put it in the compost bin and it will become compost. There is a third option for people who hoard, and unfortunately it's really, really easy for this to be what happens. And that is that that food or that organic waste rots in your home instead of either in landfill or in a compost bin. And that is not a good situation to be in. If there is food and stuff rotting in your home, we know that doesn't smell good. We know that attracts pests. We know that it's more unpleasant to deal with at the whenever you do eventually try and deal with it. And so while having your organic waste rot to become compost is brilliant, if the reality is that that being an extra choice, or that just the overwhelming circumstances you're living in, or the quantity of stuff you're dealing with, meaning that those things are rotting in your home instead, then the priority is to get it out. And if that's in the bin, that's in the bin. If that's in, I mean, the regular bin, it's more important that it gets out of your home than it is that it gets out of your home in the best possible way. So rot is great in theory, don't let it be your home that rots. Don't let it be you that rots in your home. So as with all of them, take it all with a pinch of salt. And the fifth R, recycle. It is still better, according to these guidelines, to recycle something than not recycle it. If you don't have the option to reduce it or reuse it or repair it or rot it, it's better to recycle than to put something in the regular bin. But first of all, the other options are preferable. And secondly, as a hoarder, it hits different, as the young people say. It's just like the other. Just like the others, you are dealing with stuff with a different lens on it than most people. The way you look at the stuff around you is different to the way most people look at the stuff in their home. And if wanting to recycle everything perfectly is getting in the way and stopping you from de-hoarding, stopping you from making progress in your home, stopping you from making your home safe, or even just a pleasant place to be, it's more important that it gets out of the house than it is that it gets put in the right box and goes to a recycling facility. And let's face it, goodness knows what happens to it when it's there. You hear all kinds of stories, many of which have been verified, about people putting things diligently in the right recycling bin and then they all end up in a landfill in China. There are far more effective things we can do, the first and most important of which is to cause less stuff to be created in the first place. And that includes buying less stuff. And so buying less stuff, even if you think, well, I buy everything from the charity shop. Sure, but if you buy the last size 14 jumper in the shop and somebody else really needs a size 14 jumper, then you buying it will mean them having to buy something new. And I know you can't take responsibility for what other people do, but every bit of consumption that we do needs to be examined. Do we really, really need it? And I know that's a kind of cliche question in terms of both decluttering and trying to reduce what we acquire. But it's a cliche question because it is a genuinely useful question. When you want to acquire something, this waste issue is one of many reasons that we need to ask ourselves, do we really need it? Most importantly is, do we really need it because our houses are probably already full? But if you are concerned about the environment, and if you are, do listen to an episode I did with Jan that I will link to in the show notes about environmentalism and surviving trauma. It's really, really interesting that people who survive trauma are more likely to be environmentally motivated. And we talked a lot about what that means for people who hoard. And you can care passionately about the environment, and you can try and do everything you can, and you can want to do more, but your own environment is most important if you're living in a hoard. That has to be your priority. And reducing consumption helps save the world and it helps save you. But if you do have too much stuff, and let's face it, a lot of us do, it's more important that it goes out and is gone than that it goes out and is gone in the perfect way. It's more important that that stuff leaves your house than how it leaves it. It's just got to go. Do you want to be a de-hoarding darling? You can be now at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. If you love the podcast and want a bit extra, you can finally sign up to subscribe. Members will get an exclusive monthly post with an additional top tip, some podcast and music recommendations, and a personal update from me about how things are going. Find out the full details at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. So my top tip this week is about if you want to acquire something. You know, a lot of people advise saying, you know, like one thing in, one thing out. If you buy something, you've got to get rid of something. And that all makes a lot of sense. Or some people say one thing in, two things out. So if you buy a new top, you've got to get rid of two tops. And that all makes sense. But I've said that to myself and promised that to myself. And then when I've got the thing home, I have struggled to get rid of anything. And I've got rid of a lot of mugs. And I still have a lot of mugs. I have quite a mug situation. But I saw a mug recently that I really liked. And I thought, oh, I kind of want to get that mug. And so I said to myself, as you do, yeah, but if you buy this mug, you've got to get rid of another mug. But then I took it one step further, and this is what did the trick. What I made myself do when having that internal conversation with myself was be specific. Okay, if I buy this mug, I have to choose now which specific mug is going to leave my house. And once I made it specific, I didn't go, oh yeah, I'll get rid of one if I buy this. Suddenly, because I knew that I'd got rid of a lot of mugs and still have a lot of mugs, but having got rid of a lot means that the ones I've still got are ones I really, really like. Making myself think, okay, which specific mug can go actually stopped me in my tracks. And I think there's something in this. I think if you're saying to yourself, okay, one in, one out, or one in, two out, when you're trying to make a decision about whether to acquire something, whether that's buying it, taking it off the curb, looking on Facebook Marketplace for freebies, anything like that, rather than saying, if I buy this t-shirt, I've got to get rid of a t-shirt, before you buy it, make yourself decide there and then which specific t-shirt is going to go. It makes it a lot harder to justify getting something new. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.